Oh, I realize people have been working very hard to tie up all of the various conditions of Sangha life and getting all the various things squared away before the retreat time begins. So I won't go on too long this evening, or at least I don't intend to go on too long. But just to say a few words as our retreat time begins. This is in practicing Dhamma, there's always this mysterious mixing of both the conventional truth and ultimate truth. We're on the beginning of a special time, the beginning of our 3 months retreat time, and so. This is definitely the moment of something beginning. All of the conditions have been tied up. The crew have been arriving to help take care of the needs of the monastery for this 3 month period. Definitely something is beginning, but also at the same time, the Dhamma is here and now. You know, Dhamma is perfectly complete and lacking nothing here and now. But yet we're at the beginning of something. But there's a mixing of both the sense of the work needing to be done and the time before us, and also the perfection of this moment. This is, in a way, the task that we have as Dhamma practitioners, as summoners, those who have gone forth, those who are practicing Dhamma, monastic practitioners, lay practitioners, is this mysterious balancing. And in a way, I like to think of this as the middle way itself, this balancing of both the realization of Dhamma here and now, and also the work that needs to be done over time, that both of those realities pertain. We need to sort of keep both of those in mind. Our tendency is always to think in terms of time, and our conditioning is that of the world of the senses, the time before us, the 3 months that we have ahead. And so this is why our teachers, Lumpur Cha, Lumpur Sumedha, would always tend to emphasize and not being caught up in those time-bound perceptions, but rather to recognize to make the effort to recognize the Dhamma here and now. So any of us who've paid any attention to Lumpur Sumedha's teachings, read his books, or listened to his talks over the years, will have heard him say dozens of times, hundreds of times, it's not a matter of doing something now to become enlightened in the future, but it's about being awake now, in this present moment. That's the task, is that we are, faced with that sense of being awake in this present moment. But also, time does pass by. We do have a 3 month period appearing before us, and so the mind does create those kind of expectations. There's a sense of expectation or opportunity, a sense of the future. What will the future bring? Oh, I'm so looking forward to the retreat time. Oh, this is going to be so good. Or, oh dear, this is going to be such a challenge. The mind moves towards those pictures of the future. But the challenge is to not give that solidity, but to keep recollecting that the actuality of the Dhamma is here and now, that the practice is about being awake now. As Lumpur was saying in those words, it's not about doing something now to become something in the future, to get something in the future, but rather to be awake in the present. So this is a going against our habits, our perceptions of looking forward to getting something from the retreat, but more As we enter upon this time, and it's natural for expectations to arise, anticipation of how good it's going to be, or how difficult or challenging it's going to be, to be looking at that array of feelings simply as expectation. These are mental formations that arise here and now that can be known in this moment, and that, in particular, that we might be looking forward to the opportunity of the retreat as an opportunity to improve or to get samadhi, to get insight, improve ourselves. But in the same way as letting go of the sense of the time stretching away into the future, it's also good to and important to recognize that the Dhamma, practicing Dhamma, is more of a relinquishment than an accumulation. It's not about getting, but about letting go. As the Buddha described Nibbana, it's a place, the island of Nibbana is a place of no thingness, it's a place of non-possession. So even though the mind easily moves towards, I want to get something, or I'm expecting to get something, I'm going to work hard to get something from this retreat, that those are natural and skillful impulses or skillful intentions on the worldly level. But it's also important to remember that the majority of the practice is about relinquishment, letting go of self-view, letting go of the past, letting go of the future, letting go of likes and dislikes, letting go of our fears and desires, our doubts and our opinions. It's a place of non-possession, a place of no-thingness, of letting go. So this is a challenging prospect. If you can follow what I'm saying here, I feel it's important to bring this to mind, that we have both the sense of work that needs to be done on the one hand, and the sense of the perfection of the Dhamma is already here. There's nothing to add to the way things are. That's why, again, Lumpur Sumedha would keep saying over and over again, this is the way it is, it's like this. There's nothing to add to this, there's nothing to get, there's nothing to become, there's nothing to be. And yet, that's true, that's absolutely real, but on the other hand, we also are encouraged to be working hard at our practice. So as I say these words, many of you are thinking, well, this is really confusing. What am I supposed to be doing? Is there something to do or is there nothing to do? And this is the puzzle, in a way. This is the challenge that all of us are faced with. Like I mentioned just a little while ago, how when I think it was the Pabajar ceremony, when Lumpur Cha said to the young Sumedho Bhikkhu, you must find it very confusing because the Vinaya is all about holding on and the Dhamma is all about letting go. And of course, Lumpur Sumedho said, yes, it is confusing. I don't know how that works together. And Lumpur Cha's response was simply, well, when you figure that out, you'll be fine. So it's up to each one of us to figure out how these work together, and not just in terms of a set of ideas, but finding that quality of balance within ourselves, to find that sense of being informed and awakening to that the perfection of Dhamma here and now as it is, but also recognizing the work that needs to be done to develop samadhi, to perfect the sila, to develop the acuity of wisdom. Both of those apply, both the holding on and the letting go, both the work that needs to be done and nothing needing to be done. Now, this little ceremony of taking dependence, asking for forgiveness, This is a ceremony that we carry out. It's a custom, a form. But I also feel that it's rather than just a thing that you do at the start of a retreat, that we also take this seriously as a practice, which is not that I'm not asking you to take me as a dictator so that I just tell you what to do and I expect you all to obey and take the because I wouldn't want myself to take the role of acharya or abbot in that kind of sort of demanding or self-centered way. It's not like, you know, I as a person want you to or expect you to obey me because I'm the I'm the boss. But more, I see the role of the teacher, the acharya, is to be a catalyst to help awaken the acharya within each of you, to help each of you to discover the ajahn, that source of wisdom that's there in your own citta, and that I feel that's the job of the teacher to help each of us to really be able to really access that wisdom of our own heart. And so this again is a familiar theme of Lumpo Cha's style of teaching and practice, Lumpo Samedo, where they would often say, "You don't look at me, look at yourself. Don't think I'm the teacher. It's actually you are the teacher, because it's up to you to learn from each moment. Because I can sit here and I can spout a lot of words, and you can sit there with your hands in Anjali and be listening, but if you're still filled with your own opinions, or if you're still thinking the truth is out there, or the ajahn's got the truth and I haven't, then you're missing the point. It's really up to each of us in each moment to be our own teacher. And so in this respect, at the beginning of a retreat, I always like to emphasize that, again, we can hear the words and say, yeah, right. But it takes a lot more effort to apply it moment by moment. But what I would really encourage everybody to be doing is, myself included, is to take every single event, every feeling, whether it's a moment of clarity and peacefulness, or whether it's a screaming headache for that's lasted for 3 days, whether it's a painful knee, or whether it's a blissful moment, alone doing walking meditation under the night sky, whatever it might be, let everything teach you, so that whatever is occurring, pleasant, painful, neutral, whether it's formal practice or informal practice, to set that intention to learn from whatever is occurring. What's this teaching me, rather than I like this, I don't like that, I approve of this, I don't approve of that, I want this mind state, I don't want that mind state, this one's good, that one's bad, I like this person, I don't like that person. It's a very conscious and deliberate letting go of attachment to like and dislike, of approval and disapproval, and instead reconfiguring the way that we hold each moment to, okay, whether I like this or not, let's park that over there. What's this teaching me? What can I learn from this? This extremely difficult, painful, unwanted illness or conflict or mind state. What's it teaching me, rather than whether we like it or dislike it? Whether it's something blissful and beautiful, marvelous, that we want to hang on to, rather than, yeah, this is it, this is the stuff, it's all coming together, great. No, park that. What's this teaching me? What do I learn from this? How can this help me? So I sincerely encourage every single one of us to be establishing this intention here at the beginning of the retreat time, so that then in this way nothing can go wrong. Nothing can go wrong. Everything will teach us. Even if you have a hemorrhage and you're carted off to hospital tonight and you spend the next couple of months in surrounded by tubes and in a hospital ward, we can still learn from that. What's that teaching us? There's a whole array of important, profound and helpful teachings, even from falling desperately ill and getting carted off to the emergency room. So these are a few themes I like to bring to mind with the retreat, and we'll be following the routine as it's been posted. So during this time, we'll be meeting in the temple. So the women's community, men's community, gathering together in the temple in the mornings. In terms of reflection upon the meeting of the time of the realm of time and timelessness, yes, the Dhamma is absolutely perfect, exactly as it is. But everyone's expected to be here at 5 o'clock and not 5 past 5, or 10 past 5. So please say, don't use the kind of foolishness of say the using ultimate reality as an escape clause to get over being unpunctual. But developing punctuality is also a way of letting go of laziness and preference and the kind of wallowing in the habits of self-justification. Just it's all right. I don't need to be attached to punctuality. I need to let go of my sense of responsibility. I'm too attached to being on time. Please, for the sake of your own practice and everyone else, use the schedule to develop the qualities of mindfulness, careful attention, and also generosity. Because the more timely, the more punctual, the more careful you are in terms of following the routine, then the more that gives a good example to everyone that you live with, and it's a real blessing and a joy for all of the rest of the community. It's a support for everyone else as well as a support for yourself. So I think that's enough in the way of some opening themes to launch the retreat time with. I'll be, as usual, giving a 10-15 minutes of meditation guidance over the first couple of weeks in the mornings at the 8:30 sitting. So there'll be that particular period of instruction. Otherwise, it'll just be the regular talks on the observance days. And after the first couple of weeks' time, I'll start doing group interviews for the community. And then be able to. There'll be opportunity to check in and to ask practice questions at those times. On the days when there isn't a Dhamma talk, then I'm planning to have a reading that'll be in the sala at 6 o'clock, and I'm intending to use the newly formed collected teachings of Lompo Sumato that we're putting together for his 80th birthday. So it'll be slowly, steadily working through his five volumes of Lompo Sumato's talks and interviews and such like. So that's my intention. And also working in with that, and once a week I have a time going over the word of the Buddha with the Anagarikas and Navaga monks and nuns. Not sure exactly which day of the week we'll do that, but one day a week we'll have a session for the Navakas, both for the men's and the women's community, to go over those essential teachings on the Four Noble Truths. There'll be time for Dhamma discussion and questions during that period. So that's enough for now. I think we can close there. And maybe we'll just finish with the sharing of blessings and then the closing homage.